Good morning, everybody, and thank you for being here today to share the Dharma together. Can everyone hear okay? Every time we have Zazen Kai in a new venue, it seems there's a little improvisation that has to take place, but we managed to get through it okay. So, during the Taisho, please, as usual, please feel free to change your posture if you need to, but however you sit, please keep the back straight and the head up. And try not to judge or analyze or even remember the words. Just let them flow through you like a river. It seems that every new religion that crops up begins as a heresy of an old religion. And then gradually it becomes the establishment, and then another religion crops up as a heresy. Certainly Buddhism arose as a heresy of Hinduism. But Zen Buddhism never really became an establishment religion. It has always remained a heretical practice. Probably why it's not terribly popular. It preaches no doctrine, no cosmology, no story that you are required to believe. Even the ethical teachings are to be questioned as a practice. Today we'll take a look at the doctrine of karma. Karma is thought of as a fundamental teaching of the Buddha. We've all heard the saying, what goes around comes around. But karma is not the predetermined fate that one thinks of in the Hindu tradition, where karma is something that a person creates via thought, word, and action, moving through lifetime after lifetime, attaining to higher or lower states depending, and if one is good enough, using that term advisedly, one finally is reborn as a Brahman and thence attains to nirvana. It's a kind of spiritual seniority system that resulted in ancient India in the caste system, an absolute set of karmic classifications. You were born into a particular caste, and you were stuck with it for that lifetime. And that system still exists today in modern India. But since Buddhism denies the existential reality of a self, karma is seen as just another part of the great illusion. This was the Buddha's radical departure from Hinduism. There is no self that travels from one existence to another. Nothing transmigrates, is transferred, transmitted, transmuted, or transubstantiated. From the beginningless beginning, there has never been a single thing. This is not to say we are free to follow the dictates of ego, for that is once again falling into the whole illusory karmic trap of self versus other. The karmic illusion is how most of us see our experience of day-to-day reality. It is an attempt, and a remarkably successful one, to place some sort of meaning on that which is beyond all meaning. One can think of a kaleidoscope. I don't know if you all know how that old child's toy is constructed, so let me digress here. A kaleidoscope is a tube with a rotating chamber at one end. And the chamber is filled with little bits of colored, translucent plastic. One looks through a hole at the other end through a mirrored tube. And by rotating the chamber, the little plastic bits tumble around at random. But because of the mirrors, It appears they are forming and reforming all sorts of coherent and quite beautiful patterns, never the same, like a continuing dance. The mind is constructed very much like that. We take massive amounts of disparate bits of information, visual, auditory, olfactory, gustatory, tactile, and mental, all tumbling around, forming and reforming. And we turn them into what we think is a coherent universe that includes self, other, past and future, cause and effect, and all the rest of it. This thing we call the self has no reality apart from that. But while no one would seriously try to predict the patterns of a kaleidoscope from the previous patterns, we persist in trying to explain and predict our lives based on what went before. That's karma. We might be able to grasp this intellectually, but to truly realize and live out of that realization is another matter. Case number 18 in the Book of Serenity, the Shoyoroku, reads as follows. A monk asked Zhao Zhou, "Has the dog Buddha nature or not?" Zhao Zhou replied, "Ooh," meaning yes. The monk said, "How is it that he is thrust into that hairy bag?" Zhao Zhou said, "Because he committed himself intentionally." Another time a monk asked Zhao Zhou, "Has the dog Buddha nature or not?" Zhao Zhou said, "Mu," meaning no. The monk said, "All beings have the Buddha nature. How is it that the dog has none?" Zhao Zhou said, "Because of his inherent karma." So this is kind of an expanded version of case number one in the Wu Man Guan, which simply reads, a monk asked Zhao Zhou, "Has the dog Buddha nature or not?" And Zhao Zhou said, "Mu, no." That case is very commonly used as an initial koan. The student immerses himself or herself in the question, "What is mu?" But in this case, the monks are not satisfied with yes or no. They want reasons. They have questions. That's not a bad thing. Without questions, there can be no answers. But how useful is any question about has or has not? In his verse to case number one in the Wu Men Guan, Wu Men says, with a little bit of has or has not, body is lost, life is lost. Has the dog Buddha nature or not? It's a trick question. If you say yes, it has, 30 blows. If you say no, it hasn't, 30 blows. If you say it both has and has not, or it neither has nor has not, 60 blows. And yet, to the first monk, Zhao Zhou says yes. To the second, he says no. Of course he does. As usual, Zhao Zhou is perfectly free to say yes here and no there. It is said that his tongue had no bone in it. But then, when Zhao Zhou says yes or no, is he really saying yes or no? A monk asks Zhao Zhou, has the dog Buddha nature or not? Zhao Zhou replied, "Ooh, yes." The monk said, "How is it that he is thrust into that hairy bag?" Zhao Zhou said, "Because he committed himself intentionally." Gee, how is it that he is thrust into that hairy bag? Or maybe that doggy bag. And Wan Song, the commentator on this case, says, "Checking once, he beckons, coming out with what pertains to himself." And Zhao Zhou replies, "Because he committed himself intentionally." And Wan Song comments, "Don't assume he's not talking about you." Yeah. This koan is not about dogs. It's about us. It's about you and me. I have Buddha nature. I am Buddha, completely free. Yet here I am in this skin bag, constrained by birth, old age, sickness, and death. Why is that? Yun Men asks, the world is vast and wide. That is, you are vast and wide. Why do you put on your seven-piece robe at the sound of the bell? Why do you get up when the alarm clock goes off? Why do you go to work in the morning? Why do you get dressed? Why did you come here today? Why is the dog thrust into that hairy bag? Zhao Zhou answers, because he committed himself intentionally. You are what you are because you committed yourself intentionally. Say what? I don't recall intending to be a human being. I certainly never filled out an application. Another time a monk asked Zhao Zhou, has the dog Buddha nature or not? Zhao Zhou said, mu, no. The monk said, all beings have the Buddha nature. How is it the dog has none? Zhao Zhou said, because of his inherent karma. These monks, these dogs are caught up in notions of self-identity. As long as there is a separate self, there is karma. And the driver of karma is intention. What is Zhao Zhou doing here? He is showing us the human condition. Do I have Buddha nature? Yes, of course. And why am I stuck in this human existence and all the suffering that goes with it? Because you committed yourself intentionally. Do I have Buddha nature? No. All beings have Buddha nature. How is it that I have none? Because of your inherent karma. So there it is. The ego self, which we all have to deal with, is filled with intent. Everything we do is intended one way or another. Intention generates the energy of karma, and we reap the karmic consequences every moment. And we react with intention and create more karma. Around and around we go on the wheel of samsara, sometimes up, sometimes down. Our inherent karma is our consciousness in this moment. Whether it be that of a cat, a dog, or a human being, rich or poor, tall or short, man or woman, old or young, doctor, lawyer, beggar, or thief, karma is just who we are in this moment. So how do we deal with all that? We look at our lives and the karmic burden can seem almost overwhelming. But deal with it we must. Karma is not an excuse. Hey, it's just my karma, man. It is a lesson. And believe it or not, an opportunity. We have choices. We can just wallow in our samsaric suffering, rail against our fate, as these monks seem to be doing. Why am I stuck in this human body-mind? As Yongja says, some may slander, some may abuse. They try to set fires to the heaven with a torch and end by merely tiring themselves out. We can take the Epicurean route of dissipation and debauchery. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. We can retreat into stoic acceptance. Life's a bitch, and then you die. We can go into nihilistic despair, which can even lead to suicide. We can indulge in all sorts of magical ceremonies and rituals, try to propitiate whatever gods we believe in or not, make sacrifices in the hope of some kind of relief. We can engage in a kind of karmic analysis. I did such and such in an earlier life, or earlier in this life, so now I suffer this illness or accident or some other misfortune. It's kind of like the Buddha meets Sigmund Freud. We can commit ourselves to service and good works. And this is laudable. It still creates karma, maybe good karma. But there's no guarantee that if there is a next lifetime or rebirth, that that commitment will continue. We can study philosophy. For many, that seems to work. But it's a fragile reed to lean on. An intellectual framework can easily collapse before the onslaught of reality. Or we can ignore the great matter of birth and death and karma altogether. Pretend that it doesn't exist. And we flip through one stratagem to another, depending on circumstances, and they all add up to a life of quiet desperation that can periodically lash out at any moment into overt anger, even violence. None of these karma-generating intentions address the fundamental issue. They are all manifestations of the separate, alienated ego self that acts upon and is acted upon by an external universe. Karma stems from intention, which stems from desire, dislike, and ignorance. Intention for an attachment to a particular outcome. There's a story of the Buddha. He was of the Shakya clan in northern India, or what is now modern Nepal. The neighboring clan, the Magadha, wanted to cement the relationship between the two clans and proposed that a Shakya princess be sent to marry the crown prince of the Magadha. The Shakya agreed, but instead of sending a princess, they sent a serving girl. It was only after the wedding and the Magadha prince had become king that he found out about the subterfuge. The king was furious. He gathered his army to invade the Shakya. But when the army reached the border, there was the Buddha standing in the road. In those days, it was absolutely forbidden for an army to march if a holy man stood in the way. So the Magadha army turned around and went back. But the king was still angry, and his army marched again. But again, the Buddha stood in the way, and the army turned back. The Buddha stopped the Magadha this way three times. But the fourth time he stood aside and allowed the army to enter the Shakya territory and decimate the Shakya clan. A common interpretation of this incident is that the Buddha realized that this karma was going to play out eventually. He could spend the rest of his life standing in the road, but after he died, the massacre would still happen, and he would never have completed his ministry. But this story is about more than just karma. It is about where do we find peace in the midst of our karmic circumstances. The first three times, the Buddha was causing an effect, a result. He was creating a relative peace in the relative world of time and space. That relative peace is temporary, like all conditions. Conflict is temporary, like all conditions. The fourth time, he stood aside because he could find real peace only within himself. He could find the peace that transcends notions of peace or not peace, only in Zazen. Karma is not some future fate determined by past actions. The past is no more. Future does not exist. It is the consciousness of the here and now determined by our practice in the here and now. To the extent that we enter into Zazen, to that extent we transcend the self and its karma. In the moment, in this very moment, nothing is determined. It is in this moment we have complete freedom. For in Zazen there is no past, present, or future, no self or other. So the notion of karma is not a way of explanation of the past or a prediction of the future. It is the understanding that our consciousness of this moment is our karma of this moment. As long as we are caught up in past and future, the separate, karmically generated self reigns supreme. The I, me, and mine, with its cares, desires, fears, angers, and all the rest of it. The self generates intention. Intention generates karma. Karma leads to the self. If this cycle is not seen clearly, it continues endlessly. But here we are, sitting and engaging the practice. Is that the result of intention? Yeah. But what is that exact intention? It is to let go of body and mind, to let go of greed, hatred, and ignorance, to let go of intention itself. Thus, we use our karmic existence to transcend karma and all its limitations. It is no longer an issue. It becomes marvelous functioning. We ourselves, each of us, is this marvelous functioning, beyond cause and effect. Is the body-mind still subject to birth, old age, and death? Of course. But that, too, is this marvelous functioning. We see this again and again in the koans and the stories of the great masters. Case 13 in the Wu Men Guan begins this way. One day, Deshan came to the dining room carrying his bowls. Shui Feng asked him, "Where are you going with your bowls? The bell has not rung and the drum has not been struck." Deshan turned around and went back to his room. He turned and went back to his room. Period. There was no self of Deshan. There was only the marvelous functioning of the universe, the ongoing unfolding of practice. Lunch wasn't ready. He turns and goes back to his room. When the rain falls, the earth gets wet. When the sky clears, the sun shines brightly. Where is the self? In case 21 of the Wu Men Guan, a monk asked Yun Men, "What is Buddha?" Yun Men said, "A shit stick." There is no self in Yun Men, any more than in a bolt of lightning. Yun Men is the bolt of lightning in that moment, just as Deshan is the turning in that moment. Our work of this moment is to enter into Zazen. It is to become the Zazen that has existed from the beginningless beginning. That's the only thing we can do with this karmically inherent body-mind. It is to live in gratitude for the unknown and unknowable forces and influences that have put us here in this moment. How? We practice now the Dharma. We practice every moment, sitting, standing, walking, eating, resting, working. No cost-benefit analysis, no calculations or projections. This cannot be done as an act of will. That's the self reinforcing the self. As Dane and Henry Roshi said repeatedly, practice is investment in loss. It is giving up. It is dana, relinquishment. It is relinquishment to this very moment. In his song in praise of Zazen, which we chanted earlier, Hakuin says, it purifies karma, dissolving obstructions. How do we purify karma with our Zazen? In the practice of this moment, we let go of all the baggage of the past, all of the obstructions of the future. Just pay attention. Pay attention to Zhao Zhou's dog. Pay attention to every moment of your Zazen, of your walking, sitting, eating. Pay attention to your sitting in this moment. The posture, your knees, your breathing, the foot falling asleep, sore back, stiff neck and shoulders, your hands in the Zazen mudra. Zazen is always the here and now. It is the losing of oneself in the practice. Past and future disappear, or rather past, present, and future become one. The Buddha could not prevent karma. He could only transcend it by entering into Zazen. Peace is not the absence of conflict. The seeds of conflict, anger, and hatred reside in all of us as individual human beings. But when we enter into Zazen, there is no self, no individual. There is only Zazen, only Buddha nature. That is where we find the peace that passeth all understanding, the peace that knows no beginning and no end. And when we emerge from that place to manifest in the world once again as individuals, we carry more and more of that true peace into our daily lives. So sit up straight, engage the practice fully every moment, this moment. Take full advantage of this day that we have to practice together. And together with all beings, we realize the way.